The following podcast has been produced for the workshop Chinese Objects Outside of China, which took place at the Winterthur Museum, Garden and Library from June 5th to June 9th, 2017. The workshop is part of the Chinese Object Study Workshops program administered by the Freer Gallery of Art and the Arthur M. Sackler Gallery, the Smithsonian's Museums of Asian Art, and sponsored by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. Sometime between 1643 and 1646, a Chinese junk set sail from the southern coast of China, full of porcelain, tea, and other trade goods, on its way to Batavia, the capital city of the Dutch East India Trading Company. Unfortunately, the ship never reached its destination and had laid wrecked upon the ocean floor until 1983, when British Captain Michael Hatcher commercially recovered it, along with 25,000 pieces of porcelain, from the depths of the South China Sea off the coast of what is now present-day Jakarta, Indonesia. While the wreck contained several small covered jars and medicine boxes, presumed to be for the Southeast Asian markets, it also contained many pieces of blue and white cracked porcelain that perhaps would eventually have been destined for the Dutch, other European, Japanese, or Middle Eastern markets. Sold at Christie's in Amsterdam between three sales taking place in 1983 and 1984, this plate, along with the rest of the Hatcher cargo, had finally reached Europe almost 350 years behind schedule. The sales perhaps proving that overseas demand for Ming cracked porcelain today still rivals that of the 17th century during the height of its production. Cracked porcelain, known for its durability and aesthetic beauty, captured vast and diverse markets, and to this day, blue and white porcelains are the most numerous and widely traded ceramic commodity in the history of the world. They are also among the most influential and imitated. Cracked porcelain gets its name from the early Portuguese trading ships that hauled it called Caraca. It is characterized by its use of freely painted underglazed cobalt blue decoration, often divided into eight panels on thinly potted white porcelain. However, the history of blue and white export porcelain begins much earlier, in the 9th century of Tang Dynasty China. In 1998, two fishermen off the coast of Balitung, Indonesia, discovered an Arab shipwreck full of 60,000 Chinese stoneware bowls and other vessels from Changsha. Another commercially salvaged cargo, thought now perhaps to be the dowry of a Tang princess, it contained at least three small blue and white dishes, loosely painted with diamond-shaped floral designs, which are rarely seen on Chinese ceramics, but are quite prevalent on Islamic pottery. The cobalt used for these paintings undoubtedly came from Persia. Prior to this discovery, the earliest blue and white porcelains were the famous David vases, which were collected by Sir Percival David and are now located in the British Museum in London. Dedicated to a Taoist temple, they are inscribed with the date of 1351 being produced during the Mongol Yuan dynasty. It was during this dynasty when porcelain was discovered in the mountains near Jingdezheng, Jiangxi. This is where the Mongols established their official ceramic center and porcelain bureau on Pearl Hill in 1278. No previous kilns had been located there. However, the site was favored for its proximity to mountains filled with white kaolin used to make porcelain, and for the lush forests surrounding the area that could provide fuel for kilns. Within 10 years of the Porcelain Bureau's establishment, Jingdezheng had approximately 10,000 official workshops making imperial porcelain and at least 300 privately run ones. New developments in technology, specialization, the division of labor, and decorating techniques occurred. To maximize on kiln capacity and to make purchasing easier, sizes and forms of pots were standardized and can be ordered according to pattern and size. It did not take long for trade routes and official port cities to be established along the southern coast of China. While Chinese ships stayed to trade in the local waters of the South China Sea, not going far beyond the islands of Southeast Asia, it was not uncommon to see an Indian or Arab ship docked at Changzhou or another Chinese port city. These Indian and Arab ships would trade through various ports in Indonesia before heading to India and Sri Lanka, then on to the Red Sea in the ports of Hormuz, Dhofar, Aden, and the East African coast. Blue and white export porcelain could pass through five or six ports before reaching their final destinations, some as far away as the Mediterranean. The journey would take around 4 to 6 months. By the Ming Dynasty, when this dish was made, Portuguese, Spanish, Dutch, British, and French traders were bringing Chinese blue and white ceramics not only to Europe, but to also the New World. The most influential colorant perfected during the Yuan, unarguably, is cobalt. In use since the Tang Dynasty, cobalt is an expensive mineral pigment that was imported from Kashan, Persia via maritime trade routes. It was not until the 13th century that its use as an underglaze decoration became common. Used by itself or in conjunction with fickle underglazed copper red, cobalt underglaze, sometimes called Mohammedan blue, was a stable, reliable pigment that could be thinned to create an entire value scale of royal blues. This quality allowed it to be used in a painterly manner similar to ink. It was this underglazed blue that, when used on porcelain, captured the desire of the world. Cobalt underglazed blue decoration soon appeared on almost every form imaginable, including vases, jars, boxes, bowls, platters, pillows, and more. The design motifs were just as varied, deriving from several probable sources such as popular drama, literature, literati paintings, woodblock prints, copybook motifs, textile patterns, Islamic and Arabic script, as well as Taoist and Buddhist figures and symbols. These designs included scenes of flora, fauna, aesthetic rocks, water, fish, dragons, landscapes, and figural scenes, amongst others. During the Ming Dynasty, the style of what became known as crack was at its height of production, but it is derived not from prosperity, but rather economic hardship. The Ming Wanli Emperor had fought two wars trying to help protect Korea from Japan. Soon after, he then found himself trying to secure the northern border against the Jurchen Manchu leader Nurhaci, who was intent on invading. By 1608, the Ming Dynasty was strapped for cash and the imperial kilns in Jingdezheng were closed. Many of the imperially trained skillful potters found employment at privately owned provincial kilns that produced non-imperial blue and white porcelains in immense quantities for the rapidly growing overseas markets in the Middle East and Europe. Since 1998, at least 10 Ming crack-producing kilns have been discovered and excavated in the old city zone of Jingdezheng. Presumably, there were many, many more. However, these excavations included three major early to mid-Ming kilns, including the Lianhua Ling, the Ren Ming, and the Dongfeng ceramics factories, as well as the late Ming Guanyinge kiln. These kilns were not only the most prolific, but they also produced the highest quality crack porcelains. Like in the previous Yuan dynasty, during the Ming, cobalt continued to be imported from Persia, and standardization and division of labor were heavily employed. However, there was a need to produce crack porcelains as quickly and as cheaply as possible. To save on material costs, lesser quality porcelain was used as thinly as possible. The forms also became simpler so that they are easier to stack and store on their long overseas journeys. Similar to the Yuan, at the beginning of the Ming, molds were used to create foliate rims on wheel-thrown plates. A mold would be placed on the wheel head and a plate thrown upside down on top of it and pressed into a thick foliate-shaped rim. After it had firmed up enough, a foot ring would be trimmed on its base, and then it would be gently removed from the mold. Soon, these heavily molded foliate rims became thinner and smoother, eventually giving way into just plain round rims. This particular plate was similarly produced, as evidenced by a few gentle dimples in the rim where a potter's fingers have left impressions from when it was pulled off the mold. The subtle foliate molded rim has been trimmed and cleaned up by hand using a knife. Quickly done, the potter did not take time to erase these tool marks, but a later painter has taken the time to enhance the rim with a coating of the palest shade of cobalt blue wash. In terms of painting styles, the freedom from court allowed imperial porcelain decorators to experiment with new designs and to use a looser brush. They were also able to respond to the changing tastes and fluctuations within the market faster. The quality of cracked porcelains produced during this time varies greatly, from almost imperial quality fineness and detail to the most gestural and basic. Similar to the Yuan dynasty, Ming painters employed a vast array of designs on crack. However, the most common composition on plates is one that contains a central image surrounded by 8 wide pictorial panels, which are then separated by 8 narrow ones. It is also common for imperfections to appear within the form, the paintings, and the glaze. Fired in wood-burning kilns, many cracked porcelains have kiln sand adhered to their foot rings and bases. This particular cracked plate is painted in a violet-tinged cobalt blue, similar in color to most of the blue and white ware found on the Hatcher Wreck. The painting is of particularly fine quality, and it must have been well packed within the ship to not fall victim to the corrosiveness of salt water or become encrusted with coral and sediment. It has a typical crack composition, the foliate rim having already been mentioned. There is a central painted motif of a pair of ducks standing next to lotus flowers in a seascape. Another duck flies through the air, looking at the ducks on land. The scene is surrounded by 8 foliate-shaped panels, which echo the form of the rim and are filled with different repetitive patterns. 8 wider and 8 narrower panels divide the space around the rim. Pairs of mandarin ducks are a popular design motif in Chinese porcelains. In fact, there is a common Chinese saying, Yuan Ying Xi He, which means ducks playing with lotus, which is a wish for a happy marriage. Mandarin ducks were thought to mate for life and die if separated, so pairs became symbolic for marital bliss. Lotus, the holy flower of Buddhism, can symbolize spiritual enlightenment, but it is also the only flower that blossoms with its seed pod in place. Thus, it is a wish for the early arrival of sons. Ducks and lotus together symbolize a wish for a harmonious marriage and many illustrious sons. This symbolic wish is reinforced among the 8 panels around the rim, which contain paintings of peony and chrysanthemum flowers, alternating with fruits such as pomegranates, peaches, and lychee. Peony is considered to be the queen of flowers, symbolizing feminine elegance and beauty, while chrysanthemums are associated with autumn and poetic scholar literati themes of endurance and retirement. Peaches, pomegranates, and lychee often appear together in a visual rebus as a wish for long life, numerous male offspring, and smart sons. Peaches, often associated with Taoism and immortality, are wishes for long life. Pomegranates, a Central Asian fruit, are highly revered not for their taste, but for their auspicious red color and many seeds, which are an emblem of fertility. The pronunciation of pomegranate, z, is thus a wish for many boys, which is also pronounced z. Likewise, the sound for lychee is similar to the sound lychee, which means smart sons. Thus, lychee is a wish for intelligent male offspring. Also, the 8 panels are not a coincidence or random occurrence. As in Chinese culture, the number 8 is one of the most auspicious numbers and is considered to bring wishes of good luck. Within the 8 narrow panels around the rim is a motif comprised of a large central dot or jewel surrounded by 6 smaller pearl-like jewels. This is a similar motif to jeweled string and tassel designs that can be seen on Safavid painted ceramics. Around the jewels and framing the central image are many patterns that appear in Chinese textiles and on ceramics, including fish scales or waves and interlocking coins, both which symbolize wealth and prosperity. The reverse side of the rim is also painted, but much more quickly and with less detail than the front. Again, it is divided into 8 wider and narrower panels, the wider containing more auspicious jewels alternating with sprigs of Lingzhi mushrooms of immortality. The base, typical to crackware, is unmarked. There's also kiln sand adhered around the foot ring, as well as a couple small grains on the front within the central motif. During the 17th century, such small imperfections were often overlooked in the West, and in Japan, these imperfections were prized. The meanings of the designs and motifs would have been completely unrecognized outside of Asia, but auspicious wishes were hardly a reason for collecting cracked porcelain. China was the first nation to discover and perfect porcelain production for export markets. Its strength, durability, lightness, and white color made porcelain a highly desirable product, especially outside of Asia, where the vast majority of ceramics being produced were using brown and gray stoneware and earthenware clay bodies. The white clay also created a nice clean background for the cobalt blue paintings, which were appreciated in Europe as chinoiserie. Crack was not just exported as exotic tableware. Wealthy collectors and royalty, especially in the Netherlands, Germany, Poland, Turkey, and Portugal, would decorate the walls and ceilings of their palaces with blue and white porcelain, hardly leaving any space uncovered. By the 18th century, Portuguese, Spanish, Arab, Indian, Dutch, English, and French traders had brought crack porcelain to nearly every corner of the world, including the Americas, specifically the coast of California and Mexico, as well as the eastern coast and southern tip of Africa. Because crack porcelain was primarily produced for export, its domestic market is usually ignored, but one did exist. Ming Dynasty porcelain shards have been found downriver from Jingdezheng. Not only this, they have been found in southern Jiangxi tombs being used as pillows beneath the heads of royal princes and aristocrats such as Ming Prince Zhuyiyan in Nangcheng, dated to 1603, Lady Yeo, buried in 1628, and Tang Kejing, whose Huacheng tomb dates to 1631. Not only was crackware respected enough to be used as mingqi, or bright objects used to serve the deceased in the afterlife, it was probably used as tableware amongst the living as well. China could not always keep up with the demand for crack porcelain, especially during times of internal political strife. Thus, many countries imitated and created their own crack style ware. With the discovery of porcelain near Areta, Japan was probably the first to copy and produce a close substitute for crack in quantities large enough and of high enough quality to fulfill the demands of other export markets. Nearly every overseas market that imported crack also made imitations in either white tin-glazed earthenware or by the 18th century in soft, hard, or paste porcelain. These include but are not limited to local kilns in Southeast Asia, fritware in Iran, Isnik pottery in Turkey, Delft in the Netherlands, Maiolica and Medici porcelain in Italy, Staffordshire and Bow in England, Fayence and Nevers factory in France, Meissen in Poland, Puebla in Mexico, and Bonin and Morris of the 13 colonies in Philadelphia, just to name a few. Despite the fact that some high-quality acceptable substitutes were made, Chinese porcelain has always been the most prized and considered to be of the highest quality. Due to its wide appeal, distribution, and varied motifs, the effects of Chinese crack porcelain in terms of design, composition, sensibility, brushstrokes, and motifs can still be seen centuries later in ceramics and porcelains produced around the world today. This plate, found by Captain Michael Hatcher, became part of his personal collection, which he sold during the final of three sales at Christie's in Amsterdam in 1984. It was then collected by Leo and Doris Hodroff of Minneapolis, Minnesota and Palm Beach, Florida, who have collected Chinese export porcelain for more than 50 years. In 2000, they established the Leo and Doris Hodroff collection at the Winterthur Museum in Delaware. Thank you for listening. My name is Wendy Fugelstad, and I'm currently a PhD candidate in East Asian Languages and Civilizations at the University of Pennsylvania.